And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. Boomer's laughing. I forgot to unmute my mic again. But hey, this show, by the way, covers a lot of ground across the northern part of our state. And I'm talking about way down south of Birmingham to up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back over to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Alabama, and Mississippi thrown in just for good measure. Number one of the Triple Dipper, A Walk in Biden's World. Man, listen. There's some stuff happening out there, and it just keeps getting thicker, it feels like. But the first story I've got, though, is like right here at home. So military.com had a story that came out this morning. $6 billion in aid to Ukraine flows through Alabama's Redstone Arsenal. How about that? Army Material Command, which, by the way, I remember when, as a kid growing up at Redstone, we were stationed there when my dad was a major. Much younger than that, I remember my grandfather being the post commander as a one star. Now it's like multi stars. It's like the Milky Way down there. There's so many stars walking around on Redstone Arsenal. But Material Command was not there yet. Of course, it just moved there, in the last 15 years. But Material Command brought a whole new realm to Redstone. And anyway, military.com. Material Command, headquartered at Redstone Arsenal in Huntsville. Renee Mosher, the Director of Operations and Readiness at the AMC, said the command has handled $6.8 billion in weapons and supplies for Ukraine since the Russian invasion in February. Here's her quote. That gives you the magnitude and the scope of the support that we're managing to support Ukraine in this war effort, all at the same time balancing readiness of the United States Army and ensuring we maintain the equipment we need within the U.S. Army to support our own readiness and our troops' training and warfighting requirements. So apparently there was a panel discussion about aid to Ukraine at the Redstone update at Von Braun in Huntsville just like in the last week. Anyway, interesting to me to find out that national headlines are talking about Redstone Arsenal and the level of things that are going through the commands there. It doesn't mean per se the parts themselves were physically controlled at Redstone. At the very least, though, they were directing traffic on it. The article goes on to say, too, good on you, all you green suiters out there, for handling your job like you do. Thanks for your effort. Major programs, it says, sent to Ukraine include the Javelin missile, the Humvees, the National Advanced Surface-to-Air Missile Systems, and that's the NASAMS, and then a variety of other systems, and they're also looking at Patriot missiles here in the near future. And she talks about the fact that it's not like it happens overnight. She talks about the fact that the letter of request has to be received from a partner, a letter of agreement has to be come together, they get it all done. They do this for all the allies, she said, but Ukraine has definitely added a sense of urgency because they're actually in a fight right now. So that's interesting. A walk in Biden's world, the first thing out the gate. Look at what's happening at Redstone Arsenal right here in the northern part of our state. Pretty amazing. And I'll be honest with you, if you're not familiar with Anniston Army Depot, it's like one of the quieter, lesser-known facilities in the military command. I say lesser-known and quieter, but only in terms of its, you know, broad notoriety. It's not necessarily quiet. But Anniston Army Depot has really been ramping up, even more so, and they had a huge major mission when we were definitely in the thick of things in Baghdad because they were refitting armored vehicles and sending them back out. The depot, they do an amazing amount of work there, and the systems they have to do that work is also amazing. And I got to tell you, too, it was also crazy to me. So I get down range at my second tour. I'm in Baghdad, and my team is attached to an infantry battalion in central Baghdad, and we get to the FOB, small FOB, just a battalion-sized FOB. We get to the FOB, and we're trying to, you know, locate our new hooch and see where we're going to be shacked up for the next year or whatever it is. And so we're sharing the hooch. It was my team, a three-man PSYOPs team, and a two-man EOD team, Explosive Ordnance Disposal. And so, everybody's getting to know each other. Hey, man, where are you from? The EOD guys were from Anniston. They were stationed at the depot. That was crazy. I said, where are y'all at? Anniston Army Depot. I lived down the road from that. Anyway, it was, you ever eat at the top of the river? Sure. We were just talking about stuff. All right, a walk in Biden's world, though. Think about the things that are happening, some of which you never see. Like, for instance, what are our allies and what are other nations that don't necessarily share our foreign policy, but they have to live with it? What are they saying about our foreign policy, and how are things developing in various theaters around the world? Well, the Indo-Pacific with China, is probably one to really watch, especially in the years to come. If China truly stays on the ascension, and they are going to continue to make provocative moves in the South China Sea, building their fake islands. And that, by the way, that's what they do. If you're not familiar, China is going out into the South China Sea, and you know every nation under maritime law has its territorial waters, and those territorial waters are generally speaking a certain distance from the shores or from the last controlled shoreline. Well, if you go out, in China's book, if you go out and build an island by dredging and piling sand and dredging and piling sand and dredging and piling sand, and you actually build islands further out, then they're extending their territorial waters. Then they claim invasion when you sail through them. So the whole thing has been something, and they're arming, by the way. They're arming the fake islands that they're building. Well, Real Clear Defense has an article that came out just recently, and it goes down the list of concerns that various countries are having about the Indo-Pacific. This all came from, all these comments that I'm about to read you are in quotations. Every one of them came from what is known as the Regional Security Outlook published for 2023 by the Council for Security Operation in the Asia-Pacific. Okay, there's a mouthful. But here, let me read through a few of these. Japan finds itself at the security crossroads due to a resurgence of power competition, great power competition, meaning China. Next line, Canada frets that the Washington consensus on the existential threat from China means Canada's options to engage with China are now limited, meaning China would like to extend more trade, but they recognize they've got to deal with the United States. India seeks a new global balance because the Sino-American partnership that allowed Asia to develop and progress has almost collapsed. That's interesting. Dubious of America's long-term commitment to Southeast Asia, Thailand is leaning closer and closer to China. That's also interesting. Singapore sees the U.S. girding for a concerted effort with its major allies to degrade China's capabilities as a challenge to America's global preeminence. So what I'm saying is this. When Biden gets friendly with China or doesn't push back on China, when he's too soft on their extremist foreign policy and their overreaching in the South China Sea and the things that they're doing in and among the trade routes around the nation, around the world, when our allies see that, they sit up and go, oh, man, what's that mean for us? Because, see, that's what happens. It's not just, now, granted, the first thing we have to consider is what's in our national interest. But the second thing that has to be considered is how does what we do impact those around us who we are considered to be allied with? And the last thing in this article I'll just point out says Australia wants the U.S. back in the game in the South Pacific because China has changed the game. The outlook for great power competition in the Indo-Pacific flows through to more contests in South Pacific. All right, I just gave you a rundown. War in Ukraine, the state of Alabama is highly involved. By the way, the Javelin missiles, if you didn't hear the story, I can't remember when it was, but the war is only, when did the war break out, Boomer? What, February? Is that when the war launched in Ukraine? Yeah, he's nodding yes, yeah. The majority of the Javelin missiles are made in Troy, Alabama. How about that? Yeah. And then on top of that, you've got the majority of the military aids being coordinated through material command at Redstone Arsenal in Alabama. Very cool. Then you've got the Indo-Pacific with China on the rise. Now let's pivot. Let's pivot now to what's happening with Saudi Arabia. This is not good. This bothers me. And by the way, this story came from Axios. Phil, did you go to Axios? Yes, I did. I sure did. Bunch of liberal hacks. Guess what? They wrote a story that I like. Well, I can use that. Axios, dated December 11th, so it's what, 3 days ago. Secretary of State, former Secretary of State Pompeo Xi, that's China's Premier Xi. Xi's visit to Saudi Arabia is a result of bad American policy. Okay, think back to when Trump was in office. The Abraham Accords, the beginnings of true peace treaties among previously warring nations in the Middle East. Saudi Arabia becoming much more aligned and friendly and workable. Now, do I think they have some human rights issues? No, yes, but nonetheless, go find me the perfect person. Go find me the perfect nation for us to deal with. There's very few that are literally like us, so to speak. Even Canada to our north has socialist tendencies. All right, so all that to say, Saudi Arabia. State visit by President Trump to Saudi Arabia. Rolled out the red carpet, man. It was an amazing event. It was like nothing we had seen in our lifetimes. I remember watching on TV thinking, look at this. This is new and different. And that all went away when Biden took office. Now what's happening? China saw an opening. When Biden came in claiming that he would undo everything Trump had done, which he's been doing, and he literally began to attack Saudi Arabia, calling them pariahs and saying that he would take it out on them, and then next thing you know, gas prices are going up and he's begging them for more gas. Guess what happens? China's President Xi Jinping visited Saudi Arabia this week, which was a result of bad American policies, his former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. Driving the news, Xi's four-day visit to Saudi Arabia included three summits with several Arab leaders and came in the midst of heightened tensions between Saudi Arabia and the Biden administration. During the visit, Saudi Arabia and China released a joint statement outlining their alignment on a host of global issues, including Ukraine, Iran's nuclear program, and the war in Yemen. The last thing we need to see is China stepping into our vacuums, all right? I agree with Pompeo. That is the result of bad American policy. What they're saying, Pompeo says, is when you won't be partners with your friends and your allies and you offend them and you simply won't do anything to push back against your adversaries like Xi Jinping, you see exactly this kind of hedging behavior. So that's where we are right now. The peace that was beginning to break out in the Middle East is now settling back into discord, and the relationships that we were forming with Saudi Arabia now seem to be on edge. And guess who's stepping into the mix again? China. Because they see an opening left by the vacuum created by Joe Biden. Dang. Well, I'll tell you what, let's do this. Let's take a break right now. We'll come right back. Story off of 1945.com, dated 2 days ago, is Russia close to using nuclear weapons in Ukraine? A walk in Biden's world, man. We'll talk about it. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right, saving the world one soundbite at a time. Hey, the text lines are going crazy, so we got some stuff. And by the way, I gotta take an aside here. So yesterday we did this this kind of rudimentary poll, just having some fun. And the poll question was, is Die Hard a Christmas movie or is it not? And we got a ton of texts back. And if I recall, Boomer, you said by about a 60 to 40 margin, the answer was, but it was yes.
Yes. Yeah. 60-40 margin. Answer was yes. But all, like the first however many it was all definite no's. And then everybody else started chiming in.
Like passionate no's.
Passionate.
Like they grabbed their phones and sent that text as fast as they could. But one of our texters was Penny from Athens. And Penny from Athens said, yes, it's a Christmas movie. John McClane was part of our Christmas display in our front yard last year. And they sent me a picture of literally, they have a mannequin dressed up like John McClane, barefoot and all. And it has a sign next to it that says, Nakatomi Plaza, never forget, December 1988, yippee-ki-yay, which I thought was hilarious. Well, she sent me today that they do something different like this all the time. And so this year's Christmas decorations, they're using characters from Christmas Vacation. They've got Cousin Eddie in his leisure suit. they've got the
grandpa with the squirrel.
Yeah, the grandpa with the squirrel, which is hilarious. But, you know, it's kind of poignant, too, because she told me they do this every year for fun, but they also do it because it's a memorial to them for their son who they lost some years back. And so I just thought that was just very cool. Penny from Athens, thanks for sharing that. That's just cool. All right, back to the topics at hand. A walk in Biden's world is where we are. John from Huntsville just texted in and said, Phil, could you imagine they opened up a theme park called Biden World? He said at least they wouldn't have to spend money on professional clowns. Oh, John. But yeah. And Jeremy from Huntsville said, with regards to one of the stories I just had about Australia wanting us to get back in the mix because of the Indo-Pacific threats from China, says maybe Australia wouldn't be so scared if they wouldn't have disarmed their own citizenry. Nice. Well played. Well played. All right. Let's jump in here. Next story I've got, 1945.com. By the way, there's several good, if you're just into like deep dives, like open source intel, if you will, a couple of or two or three good sites. One is General Jack Keane runs the Institute for the Study of War, and they have a great website. I think it's just called instituteforstudyofwar.com or .org. Anyway, you can check them out, Institute for the Study of War. They have deep dive analysis of what they see happening in various regions throughout the world, not the least of which is Ukraine. Some of the best stuff I've read on Ukraine comes from them. There's another website called 38north.org, and 38 North is truly almost like an intelligence summary. You read it, it just lays it out. Here's what we saw. Here's what our analysis shows. And then the next one is 1945.com, which is kind of half numeral, half spelled out. The numeral's 19, the word's 45.com. They are a little bit more editorial. They tell you what they see, but they'll kind of elaborate on it. So this first story I've got here from 1945.com, dated yesterday. Let me grab it off my stack so I can do my signature rattle there. Headline, is Russia close to using nuclear weapons in Ukraine? Now, I said this once before on here. You can't ever rule anything out. If Putin's going to rattle those nuclear sabers, you don't rattle it out. And as we walk in Biden's world, recognizing that, you know, Putin is who he is, and he does not feel constrained by the Biden administration, apparently. The question about whether he would use what 1945.com calls doomsday weaponry is still doubtful. It's on the lower end of the spectrum in terms of its probabilities. The points made in this article are spot on. It's unclear, they say, whether Putin still entertains unlimited strategic aims vis-a-vis Ukraine, meaning it's unclear whether he intends to unseat the Kyiv government and forcibly try to take over the whole country. It says, judging from this year's lackluster performance, Russian arms appear incapable of accomplishing the goals of such a sweep. But he certainly wants eastern sections, and that's the thing. For Putin to use nukes, he is putting not only the sections of the country that he wants at risk of being unusable or, you know, or incapable of being, you know, fully occupied. But he also, by the way, is looking at the prevailing winds. The prevailing winds are typically blowing off of the Black Sea, moving inland towards the north. In other words, any fallout from a nuclear blast could well just blow right back into Russia, maybe even its ally Belarus to the north. So all that to say, is Putin looking at using nuclear weapons? Well, he's still saying things about it. He's still intoning that he's a nuclear country that could do something if he had to. Whether he will or not, of course, I will say this. The man's crazy. I mean, anybody who is a world leader that thinks it's a good idea for him to pose shirtless riding bareback on a horse while he's out fishing so his people can see him looking like the strong man is not a dude who just thinks clearly. And there are other indications that he does not operate on the usual planes that we operate on. And he's got nukes. So, won't rule it out, but looks doubtful. However, here's an interesting piece. Story from Times of Israel. As we walk in Biden's world. I find it extremely interesting that Russia, which used to be the exporter of arms and communism around the world to the Soviet Union, is now having to import its weapons because it's running dry. When we get back from this break, we're going to wrap this section up. I'm going to tell you, I mean, right now, guess who two of the biggest suppliers are of arms to Russia? Iran and North Korea. We'll talk about it when I get back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, A Walk in Biden's World. We'll be right back. Yeah.
You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, live from the Right Side Studios, hour number two. Phil Williams here, local, state, national. We cover down on all the issues, and like the dude just said, yes, we are. Solid conservative and just plain right. Well, hey, listen, kind of moving towards the tail end of this section of the Triple Dipper, a walk in Biden's world. Some things you may or may not know. All right, the war in Ukraine, everybody knows about that. And the majority of people listening to the show, I am sure, remember the days of the Cold War. A lot of you do. I was a Cold War soldier. Grew up in the era when we had to, you know, be taught about flash to bang time for nuclear explosions and, you know, dealing with the Soviet Union. And then, you know, The Hunt for Red October was the big movie and just, you know, all this stuff. I remember reading the book Team Yankee. What a great book about the possibility of a war with the Soviet Union. And then the Soviet Union fell. But there was never the loss of the mystique of the Russian bear. And yet what we're seeing in Ukraine right now is calling that seriously into question. Seriously into question. And all that to say, what we're looking at right now is really kind of boggling the minds of people who remember the days when the Russian bear was considered to be the most vaunted foe. And I'm not saying they're not a foe. But what I am saying is this. It is not what we thought. I mean, I watched this morning, I sent a video to someone that came off of 1945.com, as a matter of fact. It was an article about tank-on-tank warfare, which we really haven't seen since World War II for the most part. But tank, well, I take it back, we had some in the first Gulf War, certainly. But tank-on-tank warfare has been hitting levels that we've not seen since World War II in the war in Ukraine, and Russia's getting waxed, man. Literally waxed. Well, they're running out of arms. Go figure. This is not what we expected. I remember days when there was one Soviet, I don't remember when it was now, there was a Soviet fighter pilot who defected with his plane. And when we had a chance to examine firsthand, we were kind of shocked at the interior of his fighter. I mean, I think I remember hearing that there were wood-paneled interior of the plane. You're looking at it going, what? But nonetheless, what we're seeing right now is Russia is having to import weapons, and two of its major suppliers, Iran and North Korea. Go figure. So, headline here from Times of Israel, dated yesterday. Ukraine claims to shoot down a swarm of Iranian-made attack drones over Kyiv. Ukrainian forces said Wednesday they had shot down an entire swarm of Iranian-made drones launched at the capital by Russian troops in their latest attack on Kyiv. Explosions rang out over the central neighborhood in the early hours of Wednesday, the mayor said. The terrorists, he said, started this morning with 13 Shahids. And so Shahids, yes, those are. They're called suicide drones. Basically, the drone itself is a bomb. They fly it in, just crash it into whatever the target is. So they can see the target through video relay, and then they just crash it right in. So basically, Iran is now supplying Russia in its war in Ukraine. Gives Iran a great testing bed to sort of beta test all their weapons. Moscow last week also targeted Ukrainian energy infrastructure, piling pressure on the country's power grid, whose operators have for weeks been forced to implement rolling blackouts because they are constantly doing what we know as indirect fire attacks. Russia is running out of arms, and I've got another article on that here in a minute. They're running out of, allegedly, Intel is saying, they're running out of the munitions necessary for their tanks, not to mention the fuel and the supply chains that they need. Are being basically obstructed or for that matter, degraded. And so what they're doing now is they're having to import their weapons. The war in Ukraine, arms from Iran and North Korea. Next story I've got, though, came from Fox News. Fox News, Russia struggling to replenish its arms even with Iran and North Korea aid. So, yeah, the article starts off here saying Russia is struggling to replenish its reserves. Even though it has support from nations like Iran and North Korea, Moscow's war in Ukraine has dragged on for more than 9 months, far longer than Russian President Vladimir Putin ever predicted. By the way, far longer than U.S. intelligence predicted also. Thank you very much. Russia's inability to successfully push its forces forward and recent losses on the front lines has prompted the Kremlin to continue its assault by relying heavily upon shelling and aerial assaults, which we know is indirect fire. We assess that at the rate of fire that Russia has been using its artillery and rocket ammunition in terms of what we would call fully serviceable artillery and rocket ammunition, they could probably do that until early 2023. That's an intel report from an unnamed source in U.S. or Western intelligence. Now, I take it with a bit of a grain of salt because these are the same people that predicted that the war wouldn't last more than about 14 days. Okay. So the same people that thought Russia was going to steamroll Ukraine are now saying, well, we see them as being on the way towards having to use outdated munitions, which could be unsafe. That may be true, but nonetheless, there it is. Russia has used Iranian drones to hit Ukraine. It has also taken steps by virtue of its relationship with Tehran to streamline its own drone production. There you go. 38north.org, as we wind up this section. 38north.org. Pure intsum, all right? This is just literally taking intel and just looking at it. 38north.org. Recent commercial satellite imagery indicates that goods have been delivered from Russia into North Korea's heavily secured railway at Tumangang. So basically what we're looking at here is the North Koreans have established trade with the Russians, which has not been there in a number of years, mostly because of COVID, but also because of relations. The activity comes about a month after the first train, it says, was observed crossing the bridge between the two countries in several years. North Korea announced in September it would resume rail traffic with Russia, which had been suspended for almost 3 years. What we're looking at here, folks, is an entirely different world. Keep in mind, the Saudi Arabia that met with China was the Saudi Arabia that greeted and had a major state dinner with President Trump. Now they are dissing Biden and meeting with China. The North Korea, where Trump walked up to the DMZ and actually stepped across the border and had a photo op with Kim Jong-un, who's a nut, by the way, but had a photo op with Kim Jong-un, and we didn't see any missile launches, and we saw a relaxation of tensions on that Korean peninsula. That's changed. North Korea is now launching missiles into the Sea of Japan on a regular basis, firing artillery across the border, and oh, by the way, supplying weapons to Russia in its fight against Ukraine, knowing full well that's contrary to our interests. And then on top of that, Australia's like, hey, where you at in the Indo-Pacific? Because we need some help down here. Let's get things livened back up, please. India is concerned that the Indo-Sino trade or Sino-Indo Indian trade or agreements are all falling apart. And we're looking at things like the next article I've got. What's at stake if Turkey invades Syria again? Keep in mind, the reason why we have troops in Syria at all, which a lot of folks forget we do, is because the Obama-Biden administration bailed on Iraq. Bailed on Iraq. I'm not saying it wasn't time to leave, but just like the way he bailed on Afghanistan, he learned how to do that by helping to bail on Iraq. And when he bailed on Iraq with no other plan in place except get out, and they just packed up their gear and left, it created a massive power vacuum. And who filled it? ISIS. ISIS filled it. And we had to resurge and go back in and begin cleaning out ISIS. It was under the Trump administration that we truly cleaned out ISIS. In the process of doing that, our greatest ally were the Kurds. The Kurds who occupy whole zones of northern Iraq, southern Syria, parts of northern Iran. The Kurds are an ethnic group that has no country of their own, but they have regions where they are the dominant ethnic majority. All that to say, the Turks hate the Kurds. The Turks, by the way, happen to also be NATO allies. The Turks, by the way, have President Erdogan, who is a very touchy individual who has been making overtones that he would like to go ahead and realign himself with Russia. Why? Because that way he can also liven up his own tensions or lighten up his own tensions with Syria and share that warm water port through the Bosphorus that everybody wants to use. All that to say, folks, this is all happening. At the same time I'm talking about all this, Turkey has a bomb go off in its capital of Istanbul. They blame it on the Kurds. And they're using that as a pretext now to say that they are staging a potential invasion into Syria to wipe out the Kurds, who, by the way, are our allies in the region. What does that tell you? We have lost favor with those that we had favor with just 3 years ago. We are sitting here with a Biden administration right now whose foreign policy is feckless at best and who leaves us in a position where those who we were allied with or strengthening our position with just a few years ago are now turning away from us and moving towards our enemies. That's a difficult position to be in. Listen, I tell you what, brother, we got to take a break. You go ahead and tell our caller, if you will, to hang on through the break. We'll do that right now. Then we'll come back and I can do him justice, all right? Let's just do that. We will take this break right now, folks. We'll come right back. Moving on to the next part of the Triple Dipper. There's a fine line between hardcore and stupid. I'll tell you what I mean when we get back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned.